All right, welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We are actually enjoying a nice sunny day today, so I'm grateful for that. And we are continuing our read through 2 Corinthians in chapter 12. I suppose we should give some thought to what we should read next, because the end is literally in sight. So if anyone who listens on the web has a suggestion for what we should read when we finish 2 Corinthians, then that would be great, and we'll make that decision maybe in a few weeks. But we are in chapter 12, and I'm pretty sure we read verse 11. And again, Paul is sort of appealing, reasoning, wrestling with the Corinthians, and he's being a little sarcastic, sardonic, whatever you want to call it. So verse 11, I have become an aphron, just to get some momentum here, but you, emphatic, compelled me. Anankadzo. This is actually an important word in Galatians. You know, those who compel you to be circumcised. You know, that kind of a thought. But you compelled me, for I ought to be presented by you, or in a sense, almost even commended by you, for I lacked nothing or in no way of the super apostles, eikai uden eime, even if I am nothing. So that's, I think we did that last week, and so that that gets us set for verse 12. So it would sound something like this. Tamen semea tu apostolu kat ergaste en humin en pase hippomene semeois te kai terasin kai dynamazin. On the one hand, Paul says, and actually, I don't even know if we need to translate, because I don't see a de to match the men. So the signs of an apostle, he says, kat ergaste. This is from kat ergazomai. And the stem gets a little weird in the six principal parts. So you have that extra iota. You might expect kat and then an eta. Kat ergazes. Kat ergaste. But again, it's a little irregular, but just the aorist indicative passive, third singular. By the way, notice ta semeia is the subject. It's neuter plural. And so as you often have, the subject is, or the neuter plural subject goes with a singular verb. So the signs of an apostle were worked among you with or in all endurance, hippomene. And now in apposition to hippomene, or perhaps, I suppose it could even be, would the signs be worked by means of? No, that seems redundant. Probably in apposition. That is to say, yes, signs and wonders and powers. Signs and wonders is a kind of a Semitic phrase. And in the midst of Paul's acclamation that he boasts in his weaknesses, he does remind them that through his hands, and of course we read about this a little bit in Acts, that he actually did miracles. He calls them the signs of an apostle there. But grammatically, or according to syntax, it's actually not too hard at all. Questions of any sort? Okay, all right, we'll move forward then. This syntax is a little rougher at the beginning a little bit. Verse 13. Tigar estin ha esotheta hypertas loipas ekklesias, eme hati autas ego u kat enarkeza humon. Charissis themoi tain adikian tautain. Now, literally, at the beginning, we might translate, for what is what you were treated worse above the other churches? It's a little awkward. So I wonder if it's the relative pronoun ha that's a little awkward. I almost want it to be a dative pronoun with respect to which you were treated worse. So, but I think it's tolerably clear. The English translations actually render it something like, how is it that you were treated worse more than the remaining churches? So again, it's tolerably clear. The relative pronoun, you know, sort of perhaps got attracted to the different case, but at any rate, we don't have to figure precisely out what's going on there. This verb, hesotheta, I had to look that one up. It's actually listed in the lexicon as a form of hetaomai. In Hellenistic Greek, and maybe in older Greek as well, if you have a double tau, it can sometimes come across as a double sigma, and vice versa. It's just a spelling problem. So here we have the double sigma, but if you looked it up, you had to go down to the a little bit farther in the dictionary. And in our literature, apparently it only occurs in the passive voice, and it means to be defeated, or in a more general sense, to be treated worse. Notice that the hyper there, we're used to in the New Testament, we more often see hyper followed by the genitive, but here it's followed by the accusative, so tas loipas ekklesias. And there it doesn't mean on behalf of, but it means above, or in this case, probably more than, something like that. So, again, Paul is making his case that his behavior did not in any way defraud or burden the Corinthians. So, again, roughly speaking, how were you treated less than the remaining churches? Ame, except that, now note the emphasis here, autus is emphatic and ego is emphatic. I myself did not katanarkao you. This verb takes the genitive as an object. And apparently there's quite a discussion about the precise meaning of katanarkao. Strictly speaking, it means to disable something or to cripple. Okay, but the lexicon suggests that some of the fathers, like Chrysostom and others, discuss this, and they take it to mean to be a burden. So that's the way we'll go with it. And I think that's how it's translated in at least some of the English versions. So again, Paul is he's speaking sarcastically, right? I treated you worse by not burdening you, see? And then he says, and this is really biting, if I could say it this way, charisasta. This is from charizomai, and it would be an aorist imperative, middle deponent, second person plural. So charizomai can mean to freely give, to graciously give, or it can mean to forgive. And that's the meaning here. So then he says, forgive me this unrighteousness. So I wasn't a burden to you. I'm so sorry. that kind of a thing. So really, he's really working it here. If I could say it that way. So, yeah. So that's the sense of verse 13. Questions, comments, additions, corrections, deletions. Well, exactly. Yeah. And remember too, I think this is a feature. The Apostle Paul, I mean, it would be nice to know his IQ. This is one, shall we say, sharp apostolic cookie. And I think, you know, when you read in Acts that Paul was, however this is translated, a craftsman or a tent maker, you know, in Corinth, this is, And we think, as modern people, we think, oh, he worked with his own hands. Isn't that great? But remember that high status, wealthy people, that is to say prominent people, don't work. They're independently wealthy. They're the benefactors of lower people, see? Paul, I mean, and I have to think it was part of his strategy. As he enters Corinth and he, you know, and he sees what part of the culture is antithetical to the gospel, see? I think he actually chose to play the part of a lower class person. See, yeah, exactly. Gerald kind of went, wow, see? Because he knew that if he got enmeshed in those cultural values of upper and lower class, and if he allowed the wealthy believers to become his benefactors, see, then he would be beholden to them, see? So it's kind of like, at least in some, I don't know if you guys have ever heard this saying, but beware the church member that meets you at the train station. See, that is the person who's really, really nice to you right away. Now, you don't want to be too suspicious, Josh, so don't be. But it's just possible that they're actually trying to win you over to their side without you knowing it. See? Now, again, you can overdo that and just be a nasty, suspicious person. But yeah, I mean, and you can see in 1 and 2 Corinthians just how many problems there were when the cultural values, you know, begin to classify and stratify, you know, the churches and the way they relate to one another. So really, Paul is, it's very deliberate. His rhetoric, his theology, his proclamation is very deliberate over against what he's perceiving as trends and values in Corinthian culture. It's very interesting. So anyway, something like that. Okay, verse 14. Let's see. Idu triton tuta, het toimos echo elthein prosumas, kai u kata narkeso, ugarze to ta humon, ala humas, ugar ophele ta tekna tois gonusen theis aridzain, ala hoi gones tois technois. So look, the it's kind of an interjection. Matthew loves it, but it's just from horao. It's actually a middle imperative. So look, or hey, a third time I have readily to come to you. This is just an idiom, and you can guess what it means. To have readily means to be ready, right? Or we could just translate it, I am ready to come to you. And I will not be a burden. This is just the future of the verb that we had two lines up. For I will not seek the things of you, but you. I will seek you. This reminded me, actually, when I was looking at it this morning. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's one of those stories that should be true, of the member who said to the pastor, all you want is my money. And he said, oh, no, I don't want your money. I want you. See, I want all of you. See. So, for I will not, I am not seeking the things of you, your things, your possessions, but you. For it is, let's see, here we have again, ophelo plus an infinitive. In this idiom, it means someone ought to do something. So, the children ought not to store up treasure, theso ridzain, for the parents, their goneusins, their parents. Rather, the parents, nominative, and then you supply the verbs from the prior clause, ought to store up treasure for the children. Now, it's a little bit of a mixed metaphor here. I mean, you know, to seek you, and now he shifts to financial language, and he's going to continue that in verse 15. But I think the image is relatively clear. you're not supposed to do stuff for me. I'm supposed to do stuff for you. I'm the parent here. You're the children. I'm your father. Paul has said that earlier. I'm your father in Christ. I'm the one who should be seeking you for your benefit. That kind of a thing. So, but again, syntax is not too hard. Look up a couple of verbs, and away we go. Comments, questions. Okay, yeah, this actually reads quite nicely. So, verse 15. Ego de hetesta dapaneso kai ek dapanethesamai hiperton psukon humon e perisoteros humos agapo, or maybe agapon, eson agapomai, question. For I most gladly, we had the same form, let's see, it was up in verse 9. You can see it there in the middle of the verse. And it's actually, strictly speaking, apparently it's a superlative form from the adjective that means glad. So gladest, but superlatives can have what's called an elative force. So most gladly. I most gladly. Now, dapanao means to spend, like spend money. And the sense here seems to be for Paul to spend himself. So, for I most gladly will spend, and now he uses the compound form ek dapanao, but you can see the theta eta sigma of the future passive. So it's kind of a striking turn of phrase. I most gladly will spend and will be spent. Hipera now plus the genitive on behalf of your lives. Again, not souls in the sense that we might hear soul as opposed to body, but the psyche is almost always in the New Testament, the person, the self, the entire being. And now something of kind of an appeal. If more abundantly I love you, and that translation now is taking the reading of agapo rather than, if you stick the new on the end of it, it's a participle, right? But so maybe that's the original reading, and we'd have to kind of fix that strange hanging participle. But for now, I can take it as an indicative. If more abundantly I am loving you, now we'll take agapomai as a present subjunctive passive, first singular, and we'll take it as deliberative, asking a question. Shall I, am I being loved less? Eison is an adjective, and it means lesser, but again, this would probably be an adverbial accusative of reference. So eison is neuter, singular, accusative, and it means lesserly, or in English we would just say, am I being loved less? So, in a sense, out of the blue here comes a kind of a poignant appeal almost. Or so it seemed to me. So, well, that would be a future. Well, let's see. The deliberative subjunctive. So shall, yeah, shall we? Yeah, yeah. Shall I be loved? That's right. Yeah, you wouldn't have to translate it. Am I being loved? But yeah, that's good, Bill. Quite right. So. Now, see, if agapon is a participle, and you can see the brackets, remember, around the new there mean that it's a very difficult choice, and they didn't quite know what to do, so they put it in brackets. If it's a participle, you could just sort of make it an implied periphrasis and supply the linking verb, and then it would be, if more abundantly I am loving you, shall I be loved less? And then the implied by you. Yeah, so the apostle, I mean, the strength of his rhetoric here, both in its sort of, well, sarcastic form and more direct appeals, I mean, it's just really indicative of the way the gospel binds together proclaimer and hearer, Christians, you know, brothers and sisters together. And, yeah, it's really unfortunate. I've been doing some reading and thinking about Acts, and I wonder if in the American church, Christian community is limited to the people who get together for an hour on Sunday morning, you know? And I heard it, I heard Stanley Hauerwas quoted. Of course, Stanley Hauerwas likes to say outrageous things. But the quote was, "If you own a car, you've put your salvation in jeopardy." And that's not a radical environmental statement or something like that. It's if it's that easy to distance yourself from the Christian community of which you're supposed to be a part, that's not good for you. I mean, physically distance yourself. And of course, in the ancient world, or even 100 and 150 years ago, that wasn't possible. You actually went to church where you lived, and you know, with the people with whom you shared life in general. So, but it's true. I mean, I think someone told me the average urban Christian drives 20 minutes or travels 20 minutes to get to church. See? So, but I'm more pious than most because it takes me about 16, I think, if I hit the lights just right. 13. So.
You do that all the time.
I do hit the lights just right. I try to render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar, including speed limits. Yeah, that's right. So. Yeah, but again, it's really a strong appeal, and Paul's willingness to spend himself. I think that's the force of it. So.
It's really magnificent writing. I mean, that thing regards humas.
Right. I know. It's very elegant. It's rhetorically deliberate, and I like the shift from "I will spend" and "I will be spent." Yeah, I actually like that very much too, so, yeah. Good. Well, we've got a little bit of a couple of difficulties in verse 16, and we're just about out of time, so maybe we'll just stop here and pick up at verse 16 next week. So, thank you very much.